bit by bit, putting it together, piece by piece. Only way to make a work of art. Every moment makes a contribution. Every little detail plays a part. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. Putting it together, that's what counts.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, also streaming at WVLP.org. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Laurie Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
And we're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and our landlord, Walt Breitinger. Hey, if you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, call Walt at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank you both for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager.
Thank you so much, Greg.
And everyone else on the show. If you're interested in being a guest or sending information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, or even appear as a guest, please email us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are now streamed live at WVLP.org, and Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. We have a show archive, by the way, where you can hear all of our past shows at breck.com/AOT. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And we're also being carried on IUN's local closed circuit station, WIUN Red Hawk Radio. So we're there. By the way, if we're supported by listeners and underwriters, and we're looking for your support also. So we're always looking for that. Esther and I would especially invite you to become an underwriter of this program, Art on the Air. You can find out information at wvlp.org/support. That's wvlp.org/support. We have underwriter levels, and what we'll do is we'll mention your won't be, of course, a commercial, but I'll mention your business during the hours of the program, plus other times in the day. We have different levels, but you know, we really want you to know that this is your radio station. You can find out more information at wvlp.org/support. Don't just be a WVLP listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do, so we may continue to bring you all the great local programming we do. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. Join the WVLP family today. Well, now we're going to start with our arts calendar, and I'll start with Porter County. Valparaiso University Center for the Arts, Brower Museum, they're going to be wrapping up their Juried Student Arts Exhibition and Showcase, and that'll be wrapping up on May 12th. So that's almost done. So if you had any chance to see it, you can still get in there by May 12th. So that's the last weekend before they switch to their next exhibit. Village Gallery at Pines, they have watercolor artist Lee Bauman. She's doing the Symphony of Color that opened on April 14th. That will continue through this month, and so you can do that. And, of course, if you always check the Village at Pines Gallery online at Valparaiso, they have artists once a month there. Chesterton Arts Center in Chesterton, they are now open their exhibit, May You Have Flowers Exhibition. It opened last Sunday. So it's a great exhibit. They'll be running through the month of May. Mark Vandervine does Critique Night at the Chesterton Arts Center the first Wednesday of each month and everything. Dick Church will be starting a six-week beginning intermediate watercolor class Friday, May 31st. You can contact them, Chesterton Arts Center, both on Facebook and everything. They also have a whole range of great children's classes with Jennifer Martin for all different ages, preschool to post-school, different things. Just get in touch with Chesterton Arts Center at chestertonart.com. The Art Barn is now doing their 26th annual Juried Art Exhibition that will open May 18th, run through June 27th. It'll be mostly painting, drawing, and any kind of 3D art. They also are returning back to doing the open mic performances there with singers, songwriters, musicians, poets, or whatever will delight the audience. Their next date is May 24th. So if you're interested in participating or just going, contact the Art Barn at artbarnindiana@gmail.com. Artsy Fine Arts and Antiques in Chesterton, a new, relatively new gallery. They'll be doing a Paint a Sugar Skull class. And yes, it's time for that. Bridget Nagalski will be doing it. It's a 2-hour acrylic painting class. And they'll be doing like a sugar skull that you'll paint there. That'll be on May 17th. It's a $40 charge. It's limited to 12 painters, and you have to be 16 age or older. Also, on May 18th, they'll be doing an acrylic pour class from 1 to 3 p.m. So you can contact ArtZ Fine Arts and Antiques in Chesterton. Dig the Dunes along the South Shore. They've teamed up together to bring put together a series of Dunes postcards. And 24 selectees of that can submit their artwork there. They'll be putting them in 3 packs of 8, and your submission deadline is May 31st. You can go to the digthedunes.com website, look for the postcard photo contest, has all the details there. Duneland Photography Club continues with Too Big, Too Small at the Red Cup Cafe in Chesterton. There's about 20 photographers with 62 pieces on display there, and they'll be there through the end of May. Red Cup Cafe is located right up there on Broadway Street near in downtown Chesterton. The Ellen Firm Gallery in Beverly Shores will be featuring egg tempera artist Kai Konstantinov, and she has her opening on May 10th. So along with this depot at 5x5, which is my next subject, you can see those. They're almost right next door to each other, which brings me to 5x5 at the depot. May 10th, which as a broadcast live is tonight from 5 to 7 p.m., they have an art exhibition with a twist. They have all their art pieces that are 5x5 in dimension because that's their theme. And for a $55 ticket, you buy a ticket and you go in and you place your tag on whatever piece of art you want and that will be yours. It's no auctioning per se. It's actually a fundraising event for the Depot Museum and Art Gallery. So that's, again, 5 o'clock on May 10th. And if you're listening live, that's tonight. And you can go claim your ticket. I do have 2 pieces in that exhibit. So that's all we have for Porter County. What do we have going on LaPorte County?
Busy LaPorte County. The Thaddeus C. Gallery, located in downtown LaPorte at 822 Lincoln Way, will have their opening reception Saturday, May 11th from 5 to 8 p.m. Their new exhibit is called Rush with an exclamation point. Their gallery hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Their phone is 219-326-8626. You can find them on the web at thaddeusc.com and on Facebook, Thaddeus C. Gallery. Lubesnik Center for the Arts, Nature versus Everything. That exhibit runs through June 8th, and it features 9 contemporary artists in a new environmentally minded exhibit that explores the perilous battle between humanity and the natural world. There's also a large-scale installation in the Susan Block Gallery on the second floor. It starts with an animated video of charcoal-drawn landscape with its inhabitants and extends into 3 colorful dimensions so that the viewer becomes part of the art. Southern Shore Art Association. That gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street. Their new exhibit is called Patterns, Colors, Color and Light, and it features paintings, oil paintings, acrylic, watercolor, and pastels with color, light, or pattern as the major element. And do you have anything in that exhibit?
No, I don't, because it's an all painting exhibit.
All painting.
So I didn't have the photography didn't make the cut on that one.
Well,
I didn't know
if you did anything other than photography.
Well, I haven't so far. The only painting I do is the wall.
Oh, you do paint the wall?
Occasionally, yes.
The gallery is open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5 p.m. Visit their website, southernshoreartassociation.com, or the Facebook page, Southern Shore Art Association. The SFC Gallery is at 607 Franklin Street and is showing the work of photographer Albert George. He works exclusively with black and white film, usually medium and large format, and creates prints by hand in the darkroom using traditional printing techniques. This exhibit runs through the end of the month, and their website is sfcgallery.com, and on Facebook, they're SFC Gallery. Blink Contemporary Art at 1709 Franklin Street has the exhibit Artists Do Artists. Have you ever wondered who inspires or influences artists? Well, come to this exhibit. I was there the other day, and it's really a terrific exhibit. Greg Hertzlieb, who is the former host, he has 2 pieces in that show.
I saw him at that exhibit, too.
It was a really good exhibit.
The
show will run through July 28th. Blink can be reached at 773-206-0426 or on the web at blinkcontemporaryart.com. On Facebook, Blink Contemporary Art. Rising Phoenix Gallery at 2803 South Franklin Street will have the work of Dorothy Graydon, and her exhibit is called Timeless Mysteries and runs through June 2nd. Gallery hours Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, 10 to 4, Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday, 11 to 4. And our guest today is intimately aware of that building, so she'll tell us stories.
She'll tell us little stories about that.
Yes. Their telephone is 480-216-2583, and their Facebook page is The Rising Phoenix Gallery. Nest, located at 803 Franklin Street, our new exhibit is the photography of Joel Brussel titled The Somewhere Else of Being Here. And the images were all taken within 4 to 5 blocks of where he lives, but they have the appearance of being otherworldly. And all the photos were taken with an iPhone 7. Ongoing in the Nest, oil painting, drum circle, every second Friday at 6:30, that's coming up. Every third Saturday of the month at 7 p.m., we have the Every Kind of Talent Show with Captain Ambivalent as the master of ceremonies. We adore Captain Ambivalent. This is Vaudeville meets Show and Tell meets Open Mic, and we're always looking for magicians, dancers, opera singers, filmmakers, you know, any kind of demonstration. Sign up ahead to guarantee a spot. You can also sign up night of the performance pending time and space available. We have tickets for the Swale Music Fest in the gallery. All the details can be found on Facebook, The Nest Michigan City. The best way to reach us is email thenestmichigancity@gmail.com or Facebook message us. Hours Thursday through Saturday. I'm going to amend that. Thursday and Friday, 2 to 6 p.m., but we're usually there later. Email to be sure. Other times by arrangement. And that's it for LaPorte County.
Lots of things happening in LaPorte County. Even though not on first Fridays, even on the other Fridays there are. In Lake County at 119th Street Artists at the Cornerstone Art Gallery, they are still have a, that's located 119th Street in New York, the corner of it's the Centier Bank Building. Their next exhibit will be the Concepts and Compositions. There is a call for art. Actually, it's free to exhibit there, so if you contact 119thstreetartist.org, you can also find them on Facebook, and you can find out the information about that. Like we said about this gallery, they're going to only have this and one more exhibit, and then they'll be done. Unfortunately,
they won't be done. They will just morph.
They'll morph into something else, but they lose their gallery space. We're hoping that they might merge with the next group I'm going to talk about, also in Whiting, is Studio 659. And this exhibit actually is closing this weekend. Worn out, worn in, well worn, gently used, and handled lovingly. And it's art that I have two pieces at the thing, but it closes up this weekend. So it's the last chance you get to see that, because they have a call for art for their new one called Fandom. And what it is open on May 19th. It's about superheroes, cult classics, underappreciated, inspired things in that realm of fandom. So if you have something, you can find out information on the call for art, which is coming up real quick here, studio659.org. Members, there is no fee. There is a fee for non-members, and the gallery is open Thursday, Friday from 12 to 7, Saturday 10 to 2, studio659.org. South Shore Arts. Reminder, they're registering for the summer classes, which begin in June 10th, so you have something for your kids to do this summer or yourself. They have a wide range of classes, so you can find out there. They also have some of their auxiliary places throughout Lake County. Also, reservations are being taken for the 26th Annual Bozark Ball, and the theme is Rock It Man. One step for you, one giant leap for the arts. It's on Friday, June 7th, and again, you can find that at the South Shore Arts website or online. The Bachman Gallery, they are concluding the 45th Tri-County show. It'll be running through May, and they'll have an award. They've already had their award ceremony, so through the middle of May 19th, and so you can see all these it's from all three counties, junior and senior high school art from these aspiring artists. The Atrium Gallery, and these are all at the Center for Visual Performing Arts in Munster, are celebrating birds, and that will be going through June 16th. We have Kimberly Beck, Christina Konowski, and Sue Gambales. They will have their reception on Sunday, May 26th. Toll Theater will be have the art of Wendy Wilkin, and that will be running through June 20th. So if you go to the Toll Theater, you can even just stop in the lobby and see it. That's in 5202 Holman in downtown Hammond. Miller Arts and Creative District, they have Camellia Scenarios, Evidence of Time and Spirit. Her exhibit opened on May 3rd, will be running through the end of May 26th. And you can see that at the Marshall J. Gardner Center for the Arts. That's on Lake Street in the Miller section of Gary. And you can find out information, of course, either at Facebook or MillerBeachArts.org. Southlake Artist Cooperative, more commonly known among artists as SLAC, their geometry exhibit will be in May with the Wild Rose Brewery in Griffith. They are found only on Facebook. It's a very loosely associated group, but there are a great number of artists from around the area. So that's at the Wild Rose Brewery in Griffith. You can always find out information about their next exhibit. They are usually exhibiting in several places on their Facebook page. Lakeshore Community Concerts wraps up their season with saxophone maestro Rob Verdi, and it's called Sexational, The Next Generation to Perform. That'll be on May 10th, so if you're listening live, that's this evening. They do have some single tickets available. This is my old venue, Munster Auditorium, at the high school in Munster. You can find out information about them at lakeshoreconcerts.org. And most of the time it's sold out because they do season tickets, but once in a while they do have single tickets. So if you are interested in seeing a saxophonist, go there. Ileana Artists, they meet every third week. So May 13th, they'll be coming up to their next meeting at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Munster. They'll have John Gutierrez. He's a gallery coordinator for Union Street Gallery. He's going to talk to the group about how you do sketchbooking, translates to journaling, and share his life experience as an artist, educator, poet, and writer. It is open to the public to come see that, though they would encourage you to join. Ileana Artists is one of the groups I belong to. It's been around for many years. And anyway, it's doing things there. By the way, the final concert of the symphony, Northwest Indiana Symphony, is One Giant Step. That's on May 17th. The concert will have the symphony chorus and will feature former astronaut, NASA's astronaut, Colonel Jerry Ross. He's from Crown Point, one of our Northwest Indiana natives. And they'll be doing celebrating the historic moon landing, which happened 50 years ago in 1969. They'll be doing Copland's pieces, Fanfare of the Common Man, Appalachian Spring, some themes from Star Wars and Star Trek. So we get both sides of the Trekkies and the Star Wars folks. Strauss's theme, which has been used in 2001 Space Odyssey, and several selections from Holtz, The Planets. So it's an out-of-the-world experience. Again, you can find out information at the Symphony's website or on Facebook. So that's all we have going on in Lake County and throughout Northwest Indiana. It's a busy time.
It is.
So we're really happy about that. Again, if you're interested in supporting our station, it's WVLP.org/support. We'd encourage you to become a supporter of the station, and of course Esther and I would especially like it if you would support our show, because we think it's exciting to do that.
Most definitely.
Arts on the Air is looking to grow our audience. Well, our guest today has spent her entire life in Michigan City. She has two sons and one grandson, and if you put her in the dark, she glows in the dark because she's a former X-ray technologist. Just kidding around there. She returned to college, got her bachelor's degree in supervision, and anyway, we'll talk about her whole journey to becoming an author. We'd like to welcome Janice Buchner here. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your personal history. You grew up in Michigan City, where you went to school, before you became an author. I think the audience would love to hear that.
Yeah, it's quite a journey and not really what I had planned in my life, but yeah, I grew up in Michigan City, and actually the Rising Phoenix, the business and the house behind it, is where I grew up at 2803 Franklin Street. And after high school, I went to Marquette High School, and then went to school to become an X-ray tech. And I did that for 15 years and worked the midnight shift. I could probably write a book about those experiences too, but knew I didn't want to do that forever. So while I was working, I went back to school, earned my bachelor's degree, and then worked with Junior Achievement for a while. And then an opportunity opened up teaching at what was Brown-Mackey College. And actually, I started out teaching medical terminology and anatomy and physiology. And then the dean at the time said, you have a degree in business, you could teach some business classes. I went back to school to earn my master's degree in management and then became a department chairperson. And sadly, about 5 years ago, they announced that our Michigan City campus was closing. And I was given what I refer to as my 90-day notice. During that time, I wrote every day, before I went to work, just kind of as a therapy. I always enjoyed writing. So I continued on teaching as an adjunct and then also at our Merrillville and South Bend campuses, and then everything completely closed down. So I had always wanted to put my children's story into print. When my sons were younger, I told them lots and lots of stories. They're now both in their 30s. But the one Zip and Zap was just one of their favorites. And I brought that along for you to look at this morning, these two zebras that are different. And became such a part of their childhood. We had Zip and Zap ornaments. We made Zip and Zap cookies. And it was something I really wanted to save for, you know, my grandchildren now coming along. So I had the story, but obviously a children's book needs an illustrator. And so I asked my daughter-in-law, who is an artist, if she would consider illustrating it. And so the next 6 months, I mean, she did a terrific job, tremendous amount of work. Each illustration in it is a piece of art in itself. And I didn't realize all the different things about a children's book. I took online classes. I needed to get it to 1,000 words. We needed to work together to pair the words with the illustrations. And then I needed to find a way to get it in print, which having a full-colored children's book, finding a printer to do it at a reasonable price was a bit difficult, but I spent my summer working on all of that as she did the illustrations. And by October, we had our book in print, which to me, it seemed like a long time, but everybody else who's ever done it has said that is really quick to do it that quickly. So then I spent a lot of time that between Thanksgiving and Christmas going to schools, libraries, senior groups. The last two holiday seasons, I've just been out sharing the story. And I think kids can really relate to it because it's about these zebras that are very different.
Tell us how they're different. I can see how they're different.
Well, one is red and white and one is green and white. And when I must have made it up in December because it turned into a Christmas story. And so, of course, they're teased by all the other animals. And Santa Claus comes and rescues them and takes them to the North Pole, where they get teased again. But he gives them the job of making candy canes. And even then, Zip, the green and white one, is kind of tired of all these red and white candy canes. So they start making green and white ones. Again, everybody gets upset, but they decided they liked them, and then they make candy canes in all different colors. And so ultimately the moral of the story is that being different can be a good thing. And so that's, you know, kids can relate to that. Both of my sons struggled with being different. I think most kids struggle with that still. And so it was a lot of fun to share the story. And from doing that and that experience, then I still hadn't found another job teaching, so it was kind of like, what do I do next? And I always wanted to write a novel, and I had visited Quebec City, and I do just love the old cities and the history behind them. And so I started, actually, I wrote the end of the book first, and then the beginning, and then filled in all of the middle.
And now we're talking about your next book.
My next book,
so
yes.
So the audience calls called them the Lilacs Bloom.
Yes,
so before we get on that, though, I want to ask you a little bit more about this.
Yes,
first of
definitely.
All, since we can't show this over the microphone, how beautifully illustrated it is, it's just an absolutely gorgeous book all the way through. Each page is like a piece of art, like
right.
you said.
Mm.
So it's good to have a daughter-in-law that can do that, isn't
it?
Oh,
it was amazing because several years ago, I had it written up for my sons, and I did my very amateur drawings, which kind of got the idea
well,
across.
It was a concept drawing. Your concept drawing.
Well,
there you go.
And you know what's interesting?
Storyboard.
Yes.
Yeah, what was interesting even, the one day I went to my son and daughter-in-law's house, and there were several times she was kind of struggling with what type of drawing she should have in artwork. And for me, it's like I knew exactly what I would do with each page. And I particularly remember the one with the candy canes. And she's like, what were you visualizing there? And I said, I visualize pictures of candy canes with color coming in and everything kind of blending together. And, you know, 3 hours later, she had this amazing drawing. And so a lot of people have asked about the second one, and that's why I said in the second one, the follow-up, I will do my ideas, I'll sketch them, and then she can see it. We'll save her a lot of time. But I still have a lot of the sketches we were sending back and forth. She would send me a sketch, and she's like, is this what you think the zebras would look like, or is this what you were imagining for that page? And she spent an incredible amount of time on the eyes, which, you know, when you see them, and, you know, something that you don't think about when you look at paintings and drawings, how important the eyes are and the expression they have. And so that was something she really spent a lot of time on. And she has some hidden messages in there. She did some things that family members recognize. But it was really an amazing experience going, you know, the back and forth. And you don't think about how, you know, pairing the words with that particular drawing. So it was quite a journey working together. And
sounds like kind of a full circle family event,
right? Yes.
It being you and your sons and now your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice.
And which was really nice, because even if I had found another illustrator, I don't think it would have had the same meaning. And how important it was that, yeah, keeping it in the family was really nice.
That's good. Now, where can they find this book?
Now, Zip and Zap, I have on Etsy right now. And then as it gets closer to, you know, the holiday season, then I've usually had it at Rising Phoenix, the Visitors Bureau. Esther would probably be happy to have some at the Nest. And so right now it's kind of off the shelves. I do take it with me at book signings and events that I go to. But, you know, I have it at several spots in Michigan City.
And then
also available for order on Etsy. One thing I'm really looking into doing this year and learning how to do it is doing like an audiobook with the illustrations.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
So that, you know, kids could watch it and hear me tell the story. And so that's something I'm looking into. I think it would be a good kind of carrying it forward as the next
step. Well, and that media would be wonderful. You know, kids are so much into electronic media. Mm-hmm. Is taking a children's book and actually making the illustrations. Yeah, that would be a fantastic little.
So that's kind of the next step.
The next step.
Zip and Zap.
And so now your novel is called When the Lilacs Bloom. Mm-hmm. And it's like a, I guess you would call a historical fiction would be a good way to describe it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so let's tell us, well, tell us first of all how you came to write the novel and then tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Well, and that's, yeah, as I've kind of jumped ahead earlier saying I really was inspired visiting Quebec City, such a historic city in Quebec.
What made you choose Quebec or Canada?
Because the person I was dating at the time, we went on vacation there. He's from Quebec. We've since gotten married, but at the time we weren't married yet. And we went to Quebec City, and it's so historic. I really enjoyed, you know, seeing everything there. And we actually, once I decided to write the book, went back and visited again because I really wanted like more details about what the jail was like, what the Ursuline convent was like. Mm-hmm. And when I describe things in the book, like walking, you know, two blocks down and two blocks over,
it makes
like
a difference that you have an intimate knowledge of it. Yeah, because you really feel it comes through.
And learning a little bit more about the Ursuline nuns who were very instrumental in educating, especially women in Quebec, and how progressive they were at the time. And she even approaches the door to tried to get in contact with one of the potential nuns that she knows is from Indiana and goes forward with the same fear she had, like going
from
forward
her
to her teachers and when she had nuns in school, but finding it
so
was
that
a
was
very
like
different
a true,
surrounding.
So that's a true thing that they were.
That the Ursuline nuns, very progressive in teaching women and wanting them to be well-educated and knowledgeable and not, you know, because
repressed.
The character's impression is they live in a world of silence. Well, they do a lot of quiet time and reflection and prayer, but their whole world isn't in silence. There's also a lot of teaching, and it was really, and still people attend school there, and you can see the kids, you know, as they're lining up, and so they're still very involved in education in Quebec City.
Yeah, I enjoyed that part of the book.
That's excellent. You're listening to Janet Buchner. She's the author of When the Lilacs Bloom and also her Zip and Zap children's book here on WVLP, and you can hear streaming at WVLP.org. So, Janet, so let's explore your character. The protagonist of this is Suzanne Jacqueline.
Yes, Susanna Jacqueline. She goes by Jacqueline. And a lot of the things in the book I took kind of from real life. And when she was born, just like myself, she was the third daughter. And my parents had no name selected, just as the parents in this book, because they thought for sure it would be a son. And in my family, we use the same names over and over again. And in the book, a lot of family member names are in there. So I use my grandmother's name, Susanna. And then my father, his name was John, but he went by Jack, so I used Jacqueline. So that's how her name, Susanna Jacqueline, came to be. And she goes by Jacqueline in the book. And so, yeah, that's my character and main character. But a lot of the other characters in the book and things that happen, I did draw from my real life. And on the cover is the house that I grew up in, which is now Rising Phoenix, and they are living in the house. And yeah, we share the story of when we came home one day. My parents sent us to our grandparents' house, not telling us why. We were more than happy to go to my grandparents' house. And we came home in 1961, and our front porch was gone, and they had started the process of building the store directly on the front of the house. So I have some pictures of when I was little sitting on that front porch there, and my character sits on that front porch with her husband. That's the house that I use is the first house she lived in when she was first married, and it was built around the 1900s, so right about the time frame. And when she sits on that porch, sometimes she will smell the lilacs when they're in bloom. So just as I could when I was growing up in that neighborhood. So describing different things in the house, it's very easy to, because I know the house and the pocket doors and different things that happen in the house. I know the whole layout. So I try to add a lot of things from my life that would fit into the story itself.
And yet it's not a contemporary tale. It starts in 1867?
Yes, it starts in 1867. And she's growing up in really a very protective kind of environment in Michigan City. And as I describe, her family isn't rich, but they're well off. And back at that time, and I researched all of this, almost everyone with any means had some household help. So she didn't have to do a lot of chores growing up. But she loved the library and reading and thinking of all these adventures, which I was that same way, you know, every Saturday going, getting new books from the library, enjoying museums, any opportunity. Yet she felt like she really wanted to see more of the world, but very kind of secluded in this small town.
So how much of Jacqueline and Janet are the same?
Well, I always am cautious on that, because she does get mixed up with this wrong man who really takes her in the wrong direction, and that part doesn't happen.
Okay.
But some of the things, though, you know, when I'm in Quebec and everyone speaks French, you feel that very isolated feeling that you just can't go out and speak to people. And she travels into Quebec. So some of those things are.
And she's very brave, and so are you. Embarked on your All the Things I Have Never Done. Mm. And it's your list. You've done some really amazing, brave things, just like your character.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of, you know, when you feel like, you know, you want adventure, but you're just feel like, you know, this is a safe environment. So it does take, you know, a certain amount of courage to say, well, I can do this. Mm. I don't have to stay in my
environment. Yes, and you can say it, but you actually did it. You created this list, and you're checking off all these things.
All the different things. And this character wants adventure, but probably goes on the wrong path doing it. But there's certain things in there, even, you know, my sons, I talk about them in the book. And in real life, my oldest son did attend Valparaiso University. And that's where I go in the book. Then my youngest son, he did go, well, he went to Roosevelt University in Chicago, but that wasn't there yet. So he went to the University of Chicago. And so she, you know, travels to those areas. But yeah, a lot of my own life I do include in there, and things about family members and describing my two sisters. One of them did marry the first person she dated in high school. And then my other sister really doesn't like to travel outside of town. So I included some of those things in the book too. But I do like to make sure that everyone knows that the man she takes off with is fictional, completely fictional.
Okay. Well, maybe we should just listen to I know I asked you if you'd prepare some readings from the book, so let's hear a little bit about that. That's what the fun part about having authors on.
Well, and one of the things that, like, I enjoyed creating some of these characters, and the one who I just pictured in my mind, and she's going to be a little bit more of an important character in the second one. Her son stays at a boarding house in Chicago when he's going to the university, and they had this cook called Maybelle. And I describe her that she was as generous with her welcoming hugs as she was with the butter in her cooking. I learned much about Maybelle very quickly because she could tell a story just as good as she could cook. Her parents had been slaves. She had remained in the South as a cook on a large plantation. One day she decided she wanted a new experience, and she headed up north. And I thought she was quite courageous to board a train to the unknown with her one suitcase of clothes that she held together with a rope. She told me it was not so much a suitcase as an old rug that was fashioned into some type of case with my few belongings stuffed in the middle. And then it goes on to describe as she found a job as a cook at this boarding house, and actually her cooking ability kept the boarding house filled because everyone liked her cooking. And Jacqueline enjoyed her company and often spent some of her visit in the kitchen listening to her stories about life in the South. If she was not talking, she was singing songs she had learned from her mother, that her mother had learned from her mother. She also told stories that led you to believe were true, but I doubt one person could have had that many adventures in a lifetime. Either way, the time would go so quickly with her, and whether her stories were real or imaginary, they filled my mind with ideas about what else might be out there in the world to discover. Mm. And so that's, you know, she's listening to this cook, yeah, telling her all these things. And so Jacqueline's thinking, yeah, what else is out there in the world that I can experience? So it's fun to create these characters.
Oh, sure.
And, I'm going to have Maybelle continue on in the second.
Now, this is going to be part of a trilogy.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So the second book will be available when?
Well, I'm working on it now. I've got, as I was telling Esther, I've got a lot of projects going out right now. I actually have the beginning and ending written for both the second and the third book. Now I have to fill in the middle one. But the second book is going to cover quite a broad time span. It's going to go from 1907 until the early 1920s. So
almost like a Downton Abbey.
So, but I'll include, yeah, what happened during the war. The Spanish flu epidemic was something else that happened. And so I've been researching those. It will have some impact on the family, and I can't give away too much.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, I'll give away the ending, what leads into the second one. But it's fun to do the research. And even in doing this book, I tried to have things accurate. And, you know, when you start researching, you can end up spending your whole day and you haven't written anything. And even Jacqueline, when she's in Toronto, she goes dress shopping. And so
I could see those dresses. Well, you described them beautifully.
And I looked up patterns to describe them. And I looked at actual pictures. Yeah. And
I had such a good sense of that shopping expedition with your descriptions.
And that's what I wanted. You know, she was kind of, she was free. He had given her all this money. Clement is the character she takes off with. He had given her all this money to go shopping. And so she was kind of, excited and going and looking at dresses. And I did, there's something, I guess, as you go through the book, sometimes you have to hold back because you want the story to keep going. But I also was picturing, her going to these dress shops and finding these beautiful dresses and describing them. And I pictured her wearing them even. And that's what I wanted to do with that. And her first automobile ride, which it would have been 1906 at the time, towards the end of 1906. But there were automobiles out there. And
you described it just perfectly. Because when we think of automobiles now, we would not, if you didn't add that description as to what the ride was like. It was really good.
It wasn't getting in a nice smooth ride. Those roads were still a little bumpy.
Bumpy, and almost no suspension in those things.
Right. But, she had a lot of experiences on the way, experiences she wanted. And there's even one funny point where I was talking about her writing letters when she was already in Canada. And this, as the writer, it's like, I wonder how much it cost to send an airmail letter back then. And then I realized there was no airmail back then. it would have been by land. And, so many different things that, as you're researching, and I thought, that was really kind of silly on my part, but it was just automatic. It's like, how much was an airmail stamp? And it's like, there weren't any. So, I tried to, look up those details, find out.
Your research comes through in that because she's very intuitive, but because of the time, she doesn't always follow that intuition like we would now.
And even as she gets in trouble, and that's when my son read it. He's like, why didn't she just go back home? It's like, you just couldn't get on the phone and call and say, come rescue me. It wasn't that easy. She didn't have, a lot of money with her. She had U.S. money. She wasn't really aware of, could she use that in Canada? She found out she could at a few places. But she was really very naive in some ways, yet brave and wanting to take off on this adventure in her life. So she certainly had quite an adventure.
Without giving away a lot, does she stay in Quebec or?
No, she ends up returning. And I can give away a bit of it because the book actually, what I did with the book, and Esther and I were talking about it before the show, I do a reflection between every chapter. And so from the very beginning, reflection, we know that I can just read a little bit of it. How does an Indiana girl end up in a French-Canadian world? I'm not really a girl anymore, but a 39-year-old woman who should have thought things through. More importantly, how did I end up in a courtroom in Quebec City for questioning about a murder charge? How did what started as an adventure to see the world go so wrong? Will I still end up living happily ever after? Will I ever return to my Indiana home? Will my life be spent locked up as an unknowing accomplice? Let me share the story of how a sweet small-town widow from Indiana ended up hoping that a judge would believe her story, that she very innocently got mixed up with the wrong man.
Read this book.
Yeah, right, away.
That makes you want to pick up the book away.
Yes.
We know right away she is in trouble. And so even though it's told in first person, she's telling her story. At the end of each chapter, she has a reflection of, how did I end up here? Or, what went wrong? So she kind of was getting suspicious along the way. But again, she had never really traveled outside of this world that she knew before. And was
wanted to believe her dream.
That she thought, because he says that he will marry her. That's so she's kind of believing that and trusting in him. And she hadn't really had that much adventure before. So she is having an adventure and seeing, for her to travel through Canada, that's, it is a foreign country to her. And
well,
it is a foreign country to us. But I know once you hit Quebec, and even for me, I travel through and Ontario and everything, it all just seems more like the U.S. And then you get to Quebec, and then this is a different world and a different language. And although, You know, you can find some English-speaking people, but in general, they all speak French. And that's when they get to Quebec, he wants her to believe that she won't find any English-speaking people and just keeps her in the house. Uh-huh. And she had always been used to having a housekeeper, and now she has to do all the household chores. And I talk a little about some of the stories my grandmother told me about the Ringer washer. And details that I don't think were really true. But.
We have our guest today from, we're hearing about When Lilacs Bloom. It's a great novel that's written by our guest today, Janet Buchner. Yeah, it's very interesting. You're listening to WVLP 103.1 FM, and you can hear us WVLP.org on streaming. Your character there, she really has gotten. Does she ever leave Quebec without giving away a lot away? Or
yeah, you'll find out.
Okay,
yeah.
We don't want to give away too much away.
But it's nice because you like her traveling from Michigan City to Canada. I imagine that those are all towns that you have mm-hmm. been to before,
right.
And no, mm-hmm. I know because I don't know if this is giving anything away really, because I think maybe you mentioned it, but it's I like this running theme of. Libraries and museums, mm. and yeah. it's kind of like the touchstone for her to yeah. integrate wherever she is.
And, you know, I think about that, and I've always loved books, and I really wanted to make it clear, yeah, her love of books, her love of museums, learning more about the world mm-hmm. wherever she's at, and plus the imagination that books can take you anywhere. And so that's kind of her initial experience growing up, but then yeah, in each city that's what she would look for. And when she's in Kalamazoo, the university she visits is now Western Michigan, but at the time I researched and it was up a hill that they had to go. So I tried to research all those things, but yeah, she definitely is someone who, you know, loves to read, loves to learn more, and I've always enjoyed that. So that part of her character is
very much
is definitely
you.
Me. Yes.
Now, did you find when you yourself went to Quebec that the language was an issue?
Yes, it definitely. I know, like when we were in Montreal for just a short period of time in an apartment building, it wasn't so bad. But then when my husband moved to Bedford, a tiny little town, and people, there are not many English-speaking people there. And I guess I realized, yeah, one morning the neighbor was outside working on his house, and I heard this big crash and bang, and his ladder went down, and he screamed. And I thought, well, I can run out and help him, but I can call 911, but I can't really speak to him. But fortunately, his wife came out to help him. But, you know, you realize when you're in such, you know, the neighbors don't speak English. And so you really do feel a bit isolated. And occasionally there was one cashier at the grocery store that would speak English. And so I always would try to go to him because I knew he would understand me and he would speak to me. But, you know, I know the bigger cities, I'm sure there's a lot more English speaking people. But otherise, yeah.
I think there in Quebec especially, there's sort of a refusal to speak English, mm-hmm. even if they know it. I went there, we kind of did a side trip on our honeymoon to that, and mm-hmm. we found that they get to speak perfect English taking your order, but then we said, well, where do you know? And it's like all of a sudden they didn't want to answer that. And so I have a feeling that there's, unlike even in Europe where a lot of people are English speakers as their second language, mm-hmm. I think that's part of their independence
right.
mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
We're yes. going to be French yeah. here and everything.
Yes.
And that can be, for you and mm. for your character, that can really mm. be an obstacle.
Yes, and that's, you know, that's how she felt. She
right, there's a theme of isolation yes, yeah. throughout it.
And that's really what I wanted to have the readers feel, that she does feel isolated. And even like waving at the neighbors, which I wave at the neighbors, but I know I can't really go and carry on a conversation with them. And so she's feeling that, and then does finally find that there are a few English-speaking people. But I do want you to feel like she just is in this house. She's working and doing a lot of household chores that she never really had done before. And it's a very different experience for her, and
she doesn't have the tools either to venture out from that, even though it's right there, just like a breath away.
Right. And then also the snow, which that's, I can only imagine what it was like when there wasn't all the snow removal equipment, because once it starts snowing in November, it like doesn't go away until April. So that's the other thing she talks about, just, it kept snowing and people hanging clothes out on the lines, and they must have been crunchy filled with ice. But so I tried to bring some of those things in, so people got a sense of she's in this town. She doesn't know anyone. She's extremely reliant on Clement, the character that is leading her in the wrong direction. But he doesn't even want her to go out to the markets or to do anything to connect with people. So she does feel very isolated, but still keeping very busy, because now she barely has time to read. She's so busy doing all these household chores.
And your sequels, both book two and book three, how timeline-wise, without giving away a whole lot of things, where do they take us timeline-wise?
Well, the second one will take you from like about 1907 until the early 1920s.
Okay.
I can't say too much about that because it really plays off the end of this one.
Sure.
And then the third one, actually, Clement, the main character in this story, we're going to go back and learn more about him and his upbringing and why he kind of turned to this not exactly good way of life, but there's reasons that led him. And a few things are revealed towards the end of the book about why he turned to be this criminal. And so it kind of, each book is told from a different perspective.
Okay.
But the third one, because so many people who have read it have said, why did he do all of this? But there is a reason. Not that it's a good reason, but there is a reason that he ended up this way. So I've already written the beginning and ending of both of those. And I go back to where he was born and, the upbringing he had in this very large family and his escape first from that family. And so I've researched quite a bit as far as what would be realistic for him to be doing in his early years and how he ends up kind of becoming this person he did.
Oh, okay. Now, where can they find this book?
Okay. Now, this book I have it online
at Etsy.
When Lilacs Bloom. When Lilacs Bloom, I have it at Rising Phoenix in Michigan City and also the Visitors Bureau in Michigan City. Esther has said that I could, have some books at the Nest,
nice books,
which would be great.
That would be wonderful.
So that's where it's available right now. I am working on an audio version too.
Okay.
I've had quite a few people express interest in that. And so once I get that going, then I'll also have it on
Amazon. Will you be the narrator for it?
I hope so.
I will be the narrator.
Okay, well,
yes,
that makes sense.
Because she's telling her story and kind of,
I always think it's great when the author, if they're able to actually narrate their own book. I was so disappointed when McCullough came out with his John Adams book, and he's done books on tape, done narration, and he had someone else narrate it. And I thought, how disappointing, you have a great book. But now, any other projects you have outside of the novels? You have another children's book in mind? Or?
Well, we do have a second Zip and Zap, although that might be a while. It's quite a large project to undertake that. But my other project that I'm working on, which I had done this, as I said, when I first found out I had my 90-day notice on my job, and every morning wrote, and I kind of put it away for a while and thought, well, that was just kind of my therapy during the time. I pulled it out again, and I had some copies available at the Zine Fest at the Lebesnik Center, and I've had several people read it and think that it is, something I should continue to share. So I'm working on that, and that I already have it written, but that is actually going to be my first audiobook because it's shorter and it gives me some time to practice. And so I'm working on that, and then also working on my sequels to When Lilacs Bloom, and also doing some fun things. Esther knows I went to Captain Ambivalence's show and did my first...
I was hoping you were going to mention
that. Yeah, my first comedy routine. As I tell people, no one wants to hear me sing, but...
Well, we don't know until we hear.
Well, I could try and then you'll know. But I always, when I was working, I would always tell stories to my coworkers and they always loved to hear my stories. So
Janet was really funny and we enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yes, that was the inaugural comedy.
That was my very first time. Yes. So that was a lot of fun. But also I shared, you know, the turning 60 and some of the goals I had and realized, yeah, there were a lot of simple things I had never done before, but also wanting to write my children's book and my novel and doing some traveling on my own, things that I had never done before. So I am ready for another comedy night this month. I have that written, my second and third one. So I'll continue with that. And that's been a lot of fun doing other things very different from what I ever thought I would do, but you're never too old to try new things.
And you know, in the beginning of the interview, you talked about, well, that, I think you said something like, that wasn't my plan. So mm-hmm. when you were starting out before, you know, what mm-hmm. was your plan? I mean, when you were young.
My original plan was, you know, working in the medical field. And then I went to teaching. I loved teaching. And I would have liked to have retired from Brown Mackey College as a teacher, but that apparently wasn't their plan, so it couldn't be my plan either. So
it just seemed like you were like, before you went to college as this medical, you had said something like, well, that wasn't quite my plan.
Yeah. Well, originally, my really original plan in life was to become a physician. But at that time, and I know it was in the 70s, it still was very difficult for women to break through in medical school. And it still, you know, they face obstacles. But so that's why I became an x-ray tech and thought, well, I'll see how that goes. And I liked that and did that for 15 years and then switched gears and went on a different path. So yes, I did kind of have a different original plan for myself, but I still kind of stuck with it with being in the x-ray tech.
Any final thoughts? We have about a minute or so to wrap it up.
Well, just, you know, thanking you for this opportunity to share this book. And I do have quite a few different things. I go out to senior centers with my children's book. I go to schools. So if there is anyone interested in...
How do they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me. Send me an email at jmbeutner@gmail.com.
Give that to me one more time.
It's jmbeutner@gmail.com.
Okay. And Lilac Blooms, you've heard where it's available. Also, Zip and Zap, the multicolor red and green zebras who are different but get accepted, illustrated by her daughter-in-law.
Yes.
So we really appreciate you coming on the show. Janet Buchner has been a great guest here with all
most
of that.
Most definitely.
Most definitely. It's been, this hour just
so
flew
Captain
by.
Captain Ambivalent, May 18th, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I'll be there.
Very good. Ta-da. You've been listening to Art on the Air, and we'd like to thank our guest today. She was wonderful. Man, we almost didn't have to do any interviewing whatsoever. You just took it
so
away. That's great. Art on the Air is heard every day on Friday at 11 a.m., and we rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. Hosts Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thank Greg Kovach once again, the station manager. If you're interested in
Thank you.
If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please contact us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. You can also hear our, I guess you'd call it a podcast or archive at breck.com/AOTA. That's breck.com/AOTA. Next week, we have one of the members of Duo Sequenza, Deborah Seivert, and she'll be on talking about what's going on with their chamber music and bringing chamber music to the public. We hope to see you next week right here on 103.1 Art on the Air, WVLP.
Aloha.
Ounce by ounce, putting it together. Small amounts, adding up to make a work of art. First of all, you need a good foundation. Otherwise, it's risky from the start. Takes a lot of earnest conversation.
But without the proper preparation.
Having just the vision's no solution.
Everything depends on execution.
The art of making art is putting it together.
Bit by bit.
Note.
fine note, working on projection. Lips, teeth, throat, looking for a moment to inhale, keeping the emotional connection even when your fellow actors fail.
Pointing up the subtext by inflection,
helping your director reach perfection,
even though you have a strong objection to the way she's handling the direction.
Art isn't easy. Every minor detail is a major decision. Have to keep things in scale, have to hold to your vision.
Even when you're feeling apprehensive that you're looking bland and inoffensive,
and you wish your wardrobe was extensive,
don't forget that spangles are expensive.